Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, September the 11th, 261st day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, noted somebody, Bill Schauser. I can't call you teacher anymore because you're not teaching.
I'm always your teacher, Brian. No. Just keep with it.
I see. That's your albatross, and it's mine also.
Absolutely. You live with it till I die.
Okay, well, yeah. Apologies extended. And you brought along somebody who's not a student or former student of yours.
I'm a student of his. At least I watch all his stuff on YouTube, and I read his articles. So, yes, it's Dr. Ray Seidler, former EPA official for 17 years in the University of Southern Oregon, or the University of Oregon, as a professor of microbiology.
If it was Southern Oregon, he wasn't going to be allowed to be on this radio station.
So, very much an expert. He will be speaking at Humboldt tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in the Native Forum. He spoke last night at the Grange, which was a fantastic talk. I learned a tremendous amount.
Oh, good. Always know that the old dog can at least get in some new tricks.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I got some new tricks.
Into his bucket. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that Ray had as EPA and some of the things that he's seeing today as an independent that might be a little concerning to us. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ray Seidler and Bill Schauser. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. I'm going to see if I can find something in here like botany. Would that be appropriate?
It would. It would. Okay.
Probably don't have one then. Found birth control, though.
No, that won't work.
How about boredom?
Okay.
Oh, I don't think
that's
that
as close
work.
To biology as I can get. Being a former student of his.
Of Bill's.
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay. Quote, "I'm afraid of nothing except being bored."
I like that.
You
I like that.
One? Okay. Yep. Little redemption there then.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Okay. So, Bill, why did you bring Ray to town? What is this undercurrent? What's going on here?
Well, you know, I'm the spokesperson for Yes on Measure P, which is the banning, if you will, of GMO crops being produced in our community. We are very much going organic or GMO verified free in all sectors. And so we wanted to educate the public, and we wanted to bring in some big dogs that know what they're talking about. And I think former EPA people that wrote a lot of the studies that we should be looking at and we're not. Bringing in somebody, Consumers Union comes in next week, and then somebody from UC Berkeley who's an ecologist. And so believe it or not, I do believe in education. 30 years in that thing, we wanted to get it going. So that's why he's here.
Ray, EPA, I know Oregon State also has a pretty strong and extensive ag effort throughout the state. Did the two complement each other? When you went from regulator to researcher, were there consistencies, or did you kind of have to wear a different hat when you moved from one to the other?
Oh, it's a very different experience. And Brian, by the way, thank you for allowing me to be here. Thank you for the invitation, Bill, to come to your beautiful area here of California, Humboldt County.
Would you take him out for dinner last night or something?
No.
Maybe we'll do lunch.
There you go.
Us Oregonians are simple folk. Brian, to come back to your question, it's very, very different life. Very different life in the university versus being a scientist in the federal government. When you're at the university, the pressures are, you know, to be prepared to give lectures to your students, to bring in outside dollars to support your research, et cetera. And you're kind of your own person. When you go to work for the federal government as a research scientist, you have to realize you're part of a team, more of a team, a co-equal with other scientists there, and there were many different kinds of challenges. You never stop being a teacher, of course. That's part of the life of a scientist. But some of the things, you know, you're able to go to Washington, D.C. to talk to your colleagues back there and say, look, this is an example of the problem, or these are the problems. We need some money for this. Would you support us in the research side of EPA way out in Oregon? Because this is what I'm thinking, what I believe is important.
You're still part of the continental U.S., but way out in Oregon, yeah.
Yes.
With the EPA, Ray, what was the biggest surprise? I mean, just one of those V8 moments, and you kind of go, oh, really?
EPA really consists of, at the highest level, two different divisions. There is a regulatory division and the research division. It's the latter that I was in. And I think one of my biggest surprises is to go back east and talk to the regulators and find out it took a lot to shake their tree. You know, I'd come back with some results in hand. Say, wow, we really got to pay attention to this. You really need to talk to industry about doing these results. Ray, that's nice. Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do.
Was it a challenge to the established protocols, or was it a challenge to their individual preconceptions of what the, you know, so they, it was a personal thing rather than a structural thing that they were kind of having that lack of passion about?
I don't know how to answer that, to be really honest with you, Brian, but the bottom line is, you know, in general, they were very supportive of our research. And maybe I was just too new and too, in those days, young, enthusiastic. You look what we discovered. And when you go to industry with your requirements, could you please ask them to look at the effects of these chemicals, say, on soil microorganisms? Well, Ray, who cares about soil microorganisms? What kind of soil microorganisms? Why are they important?
Oh, so you had to educate the regulators about...
Exactly. Of course.
I had a very similar discussion. Yes. We had a former former division, not chair because the FCC doesn't have that, but a division headquarter guy. Mm-hmm. And he was saying the same thing.
Yeah.
That some of the changes that have happened in that area, you're getting people who are smart, but they're not necessarily of that niche. So with EPA, they weren't really knowledgeable about the stuff. They were looking at the regulation and the regulatory of what the rules were. Same thing with the FCC. They weren't radio guys.
Yeah.
They were regulators. And, well, how come you need to know that?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm not really trying to criticize my former colleagues at all, because they have rules, and those rules are sent on down from Congress.
Sure, but You were teaching them.
Absolutely, and that's part of the life cycle of a scientist. You're born a teacher, and you don't realize it till you get your degree, and then you get paid for being a teacher, and then you're expected to be a teacher. That's why I'm here, to share information.
And we'll do that when we come back. KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW three times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Time is 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ray Seiler and Bill Schauser. Guys, the concept of GMO in general terms, and Bill was on a month ago-ish, and at that point, I was kind of coming from the same perspective a lot of folks do, that somehow GMO has become a political thing. Not a scientific thing, but it's been usurped, and I guess that's probably the best term, and used for political. You know, you see the bumper stickers on the cars that have got a whole bunch of other political things. Or you see political rallies and, you know, the chants and all that. Where did it go from science into something else?
Wow, that is a great question, Brian. For me, from my perspective and my background, it's always been science. And I think it drifted away, as you said, into the political realm, primarily, in my humble opinion, primarily because of the pushbacks from industry. Scientists are gradually learning about technical aspects of the management strategies, the impact of those management strategies on the environment, possibly on health ramifications to non-target critters that live out there. And the industry's is saying, look, no, this is not how it is. This is how it is. So it becomes, when there becomes a difference of opinion.
Dueling scientists.
Scientists sometimes take a back seat and we run away, and then things become politicized. Well, I'm not here because I'm a politician by any means. My life is science. I love science. And I just see something that's wrong with the management of the technology. I'm not anti-biotechnology. I'm a scientist. I'm a microbiologist. I'm an environmental scientist. But I see a lot of things wrong with how the technology is being managed on our food system out in the field.
Is it lack? I mean, a lot of the stuff comes from consumer pressure. If I don't like whatever it is, I don't buy it. All of a sudden, we don't have to make it anymore. Things change. Do you see GMO? No, let me say it differently. Do you see public pressure starting to change, or consumer patterns and habits starting to change, as information becomes more readily available without the political hooks associated to it?
Yeah, Brian, I certainly do, especially during the last 5 to 8 years or so. People of the world, and I mean from Europe to Japan, other areas in Asia, and back to the United States, are a little bit more concerned, and there is increasing intensity in that concern about the quality of the food that is available to purchase. We are becoming much more health conscious, and I think this is being manifested in some of the numbers, statistics that we're seeing with, for example, organic farming. And organic farming products now comprising 5% of the total marketplace for foods.
Do we have a definition of what organic means?
Well, it's a certification process put out.
This is the certified organic
product. Yes,
not just those that throw the label on and call themselves organic.
Well, it's illegal to throw that label on.
It needs to be, don't they?
Yeah, it needs to be documented. It needs to be certified through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So it's a very, very formal process. It's a special, different way to grow and to produce food without the use of toxic chemicals. And we've seen that market in organic food growing at nearly 10% per year for the last 10 years.
Ray, you mentioned, you used the phrase toxic chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that a, are there chemicals that aren't toxic?
Well, it depends on how you define it. As a scientist, we're talking about pesticides. And by definition, a pesticide is something that kills something. So yes, it's a toxic chemical.
So off?
Pardon me?
Off, the bug spray?
Oh,
would
yes.
be a toxic. Yeah. I think for folks mm-hmm. to wrap their heads around mm-hmm. or hands around this stuff, they need to be able to understand basic things. So would off be? Does it use a toxic chemical? It sounds like by definition it is.
Yeah.
Is it an unhealthy chemical?
Well, it's certainly unhealthy to something.
For mosquitoes, yeah, okay.
exactly. So by definition, again, a pesticide is a toxic chemical. And, we can get, I don't want to get too philosophical here, but just about anything in our world can be a toxic chemical. It depends upon the concentration and the length of exposure. But, being reasonable, practical, everyday world, yes, there are toxic chemicals in the product called off. And we as a society see this particular kind of a toxin as beneficial because it gets rid of a pest. But there are other chemicals that are not so specific. For example, these class of chemicals that you can see manifested by these turquoise corn seeds that I'm holding up in front of you. There are toxic chemicals there called neos that are intended to get rid of a worm pest that chews on corn kernels. That's great. Let's get rid of those guys. Let's help our farmers. But there are other critters in our society that are very important to us that are also harmed by the same chemical.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540227, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Schauser, who's
quietly sitting here.
Yeah. Sleeping, I thought, is what it was, but I guess his nap is now over. And Ray Seidler. Ray, as we talk about what GMOs are, in the last segment, you were talking about the benefit. Right? We used off as an example. It seems to me like a lot of this stuff is a simple, to drag you over into the business part of the campus, risk-benefit equation. Okay, but that presumes that we know what the risks are and we know what the benefits are. Do we know what the risks are with some of the GMOs? Do we know what the benefits are of not using GMO?
Yeah, absolutely not all the answers are in. That's a very simple, straightforward response, and that is true. We do not know what all the risks are, despite so-called regulatory oversight. If we did, we probably wouldn't be here today having this conversation. The benefits, as an environmental scientist, I would say 90% or more of my presentation last night, not necessarily exactly designed to say this, but I don't see the benefits of the technology, folks.
Could they have been benefits that were, but no longer are benefits? When they started out being applied years or decades ago?
Okay, let me be very specific and repeat what I said earlier. I'm not anti-biotechnology. You know, biotechnology bumps into forensics, bumps into alcohol production, bumps into wonderful dairy products like cheeses production, et cetera, et cetera. And it's the management aspects of genetically engineered crops that we need to continue to focus on. And I just don't believe there are the benefits. Now, you hear otherwise, and this is okay. You've got to expect this. People are defending their lifestyle. People are defending the company policy. People are defending their careers. But if you take a step back and say, okay, show me the data that says the yields are better than conventional crops. Oh, yes, Ray, there's 29% increase in the yields for farmers in developing countries. Isn't that wonderful? What are the control experiments? 29% increase based on what? Well, we don't really have time to teach these farmers how to do control experiments. Well, then you don't know if it's really an increase in yield. In this country and in Europe, scientists throughout the world, our U.S. Department of Agriculture has published papers, our federal scientists, our federal researchers in our universities show the information that there's no significant difference in yield. And that's okay. That's nothing to be embarrassed about. Don't run away from this. It's okay. This is what is expected. There is no difference in the yield because being resistant to Roundup spray, that doesn't make more corn kernels on the cob. Come on, it's okay. Don't run away from the facts.
So is it inertia? Or is it...
It's a commodity.
More costly.
We're selling.
To
there
make
are
the change.
Worldwide companies that are selling these products. Why should they not say that it's greater or as great as sliced bread? they're making, I mean, this is their life.
And from their perspective, they have scientific support for those statements? I mean, the 29% yield thing, okay, yeah. Simple mind, okay, again, you know, out of the business department, I go, okay, mm-hmm. You got five bushels this way, you got seven bushels this way, there's mm-hmm. an increase.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why an increase? Is it due to the seed product that our chemical corporations are producing? My contention is, as a scientist, we really don't know, because the control experiment using the same variety of corn that's not genetically engineered has not been grown side by side. It may be 29% better than what this peasant farmer is used to getting, because he has a hybrid variety of corn that he's been using for 50 years. Well, the company just brings in a variety off the shelf from last year, and it produces more corn.
As a business guy, whether you're the base level farmer guy, that's not right. Third world, you don't have a lot of knowledge, you just do. Wouldn't you want to know? Because if one way it was more efficient, you go there. There's more profit in that direction. You go there.
I mean, agree 100%, Bill, and I would... I'm sorry, Brian.
That's okay.
Sorry.
You smack him when you say that, too. You do have to wake him up to get his attention, though, not just his name.
Brian, I agree with what you just said. Exactly. And wouldn't it behoove all of the interests to do and publish and flaunt a control experiment? It's not being done. And that in itself concerns me, makes me more suspicious.
By either side?
By anyone.
Boy, I don't even have a college degree. I have to take a PE class and an English one still. I would think that would be a grand opportunity for a thesis.
Absolutely.
Or for a school to get some kind of grant funding to be able... I would think that there would be a long line of people wanting to do that stuff.
Brian, guess what? These are patented seeds that, by patent law, prohibit scientists from doing research of the very nature that you are wondering, why isn't it being done?
So you couldn't buy some?
Absolutely not. Unless the only way that research can be done is if the seed producer gives the scientist written permission to do so.
So Bob the farmer couldn't do it on his own?
Absolutely not legal. The farmer doesn't own those seeds. He leases those seeds on a year basis from the company.
KINS, News and Information Time is 3:42. We'll be back with more from Ray Seidler and Bill Schauser.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Schauser and Ray Seidler. Ray, it would seem to me just a regular business approach would be you do the study you've got on the new product and you see if it's any better than the other. I mean, if it's a car, you do it. If it's a pen, you do it. If it's clothing, you do it. If it's agricultural product, wouldn't you just do it? And if it isn't better, you move on to something else and refocus those resources into another area.
Why would you, if you were going to do that in-house as an industry, why would you necessarily make it available to the public if it didn't show some strength or some information that you wanted to brag about? And industries are not out there bragging on the corner street. No, come get your big yield, come get your big yield. Only at times of pushback when they have to defend their promises made to the farmers in the 1990s. Buy our seeds. This is the new agricultural revolution. You'll make more money. your yields will be better. And here we are 17 years later when our U.S. Department of Agriculture issued a report in February of this year saying basically, folks, the yields are not always significantly different. And in fact, there are occasions actually when farmers can make more money with genetically engineered crops. And
because of a premium price associated with it or a premium production not associated
with it? It's even easier than that, Brian. And in the USDA report, they state that farmers have been known to make more money growing genetically engineered crops because of the convenience. They have more time available. The farmers have more time available to work off the farm and increase their income by other ways. That is in that is paraphrased information in the U.S. Department of Agriculture publication that is talking about the benefits of the technology. You have more time to put in more hours in another job. That's how you can make more money with genetically engineered crops? I'm sorry. That doesn't feel good to me.
Where is the agricultural community, the farmers, in this?
They're divided, strongly divided. I can tell you...
kind of like Humboldt County is in general?
Yeah. You know what's happened in Southern Oregon counties where I'm from. We voted to ban, by a vote of 2-1, we voted to ban the planting of genetically engineered crops this May. We are a conservative community. In fact, we are the only congressional district in the state of Oregon that has a Republican representative in the House of Representatives. And that community voted 2-1. 66% said no more genetically engineered crops. Let's get rid of them. As an encouragement, we are flaunting now a seed sanctuary, a community of two counties adjoining a GMO-free zone. Come to us, certified organic farmers. Come to us, conventional farmers. You don't have to worry about contamination.
It's Josephine and Jackson counties?
Exactly.
So the Illinois Valley?
Rogue Valley.
Okay. Where do you, I'm thinking, the strawberry guys on the side of the road.
Yeah, that is Illinois Valley, but that's a subset of the larger Rogue Valley.
Right. Okay. I spend more time there than I do in your part of the woods.
And so my question is, wouldn't you like to be able to have that same concept and principle to kind of help to establish not only Humboldt, but your adjoining sister counties, Santa Cruz, Marin, to name a couple, as a regional GMO-free zone, knowing that that is the fastest growing compartment of American agriculture, that is organic farming. It's been growing 10% per year for the last 10 years. Wouldn't you like to have your local farmers get a piece of this action by voting for the Measure P?
The pushback locally,
yes,
from those who are, whether it's here or whether it was the third, in your area, was it, this is how we do it, this is how we've always done it, this is how we feel comfortable doing it? Was it lack of knowledge of the information, or was it, I have the information and I've determined that this is what I think I want to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Brian, I don't understand.
The one-third that voted not to be GMO free.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of a sense of what the no votes were, why they voted no?
I would view it from my perspective as folks that did not fully understand and appreciate the economic financial consequences of passing this measure.
So they didn't see the upside.
Right. And there was a big movement in our county that our taxpayers in our county cannot afford this measure, which was proven wrong.
Bill, nice to see you quiet in the corner.
Hey.
Yeah, don't have to say anything.
Okay.
Hey was enough.
Okay.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.